Grace to you and peace from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. A couple of years ago, Robin and I were introduced to a new show, or at least it was new to us while we were visiting a friend in Arkansas. And it was actually during the second season of the show, but we went back and watched the first season together. And it's a show I recommend with a warning. And the warning is that this is a show that is filmed and based in England, and it appears on Amazon Prime. So the language is colorful. Not only, I mean, are there nice accents, but they use some words that we don't use. Well, we use, but they use them a lot. A lot is adjectives, I would say. Anyway, so understand that. But as long as you understand that, the show is called Clarkson's Farm. And has anybody seen it? It's in its third season. Colorful language, right? I mean, there's, yeah. It's in its third season, and it's all available for streaming on Amazon Prime. It features Jeremy Clarkson, who is apparently quite well known in England. And he's quite well known among car buffs. I didn't know who he was until we started watching Clarkson's Farm, but I guess he was on Top Gear, and I just heard that he's retiring from that, and then Grand Tour. Any of those ring a bell? I haven't seen either of them either. But then he went on to host the British version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So he made a few dollars for himself, and so in 2008, he invested in, bought a 1,000-acre farm in England, and he renamed the farm the Diddley Squat Farm. Diddley Squat. For over a decade, he leased the land to professional farmers, but in about 2020, he decided to move from London out to the farm more full-time and to try his hand at farming his land himself-ish. He has help. And so he has a film crew there capturing all of his efforts and all of his failures. Well, a lot of them. I'm sure there's plenty that don't make the through the editing process. But Clarkson readily admits that while he is trying to farm his land, he is not relying upon his land for his livelihood. I mean, he is relying upon the show, certainly. But he isn't relying upon what the land produces in order for him to still be able to support himself and his family. But he is in a unique position to highlight the challenges and the difficulties that farmers face every day. Over the three seasons, Clarkson attempts to grow a variety of crops, a lot of different crops, and he decides to raise a lot of different livestock. We've got cattle, sheeps, that's what he calls them, not sheep, sheeps. I thought sheep was plural, but you add an S onto it. Sheeps, goats, pigs, bees, he tries them all. And in addition to the frustrations that he faces because of the British governmental bureaucracy and the local town council, he also, and all farmers also, face the challenges of the evolving environmental factors. In season one, they contend with a 500-year drought. In season two, they have to endure record rainfall. Be careful what you pray for. The question is, how do farmers prepare and anticipate such events if they don't have Joseph to tell them to store up their thank you. Yeah, I tell you, the first service, that was a thud. I'm like, oh, you know that was a joke, right? Anyway, thank you, Sandy. All right, one of the things that struck me in each of the episodes is the patience that farmers have. You see, farmers wait. They wait for the weather to be correct to plant. They wait for the crop to grow. And even when it's grown, they wait until it's the right height, the right size, till it's ripe, whatever that might mean for that crop. And then when it is, they have to wait for the weather to be right to be able to harvest that crop that they waited to grow, that they waited to plant. And then once they've harvested it, they have to wait for it to be evaluated to determine if it makes the grade. Can it be used for an expensive purpose? Something we might eat? Or is it not good enough for that, and it's only good to be used for grain to feed animals? If it's used for humans, you make more money. If it's used to feed the animals, you make less. I think the waiting has got to be the hardest part. I think the Israelites would agree. As we read from Exodus this morning, you see, the Israelites have already waited over 400 years to be released from their slavery in Egypt. They've waited and wandered for 40 years in the wilderness to arrive at the promised land. And now Moses has gone up the mountain. And we read in Exodus 24:18 that when Moses went up to the top of the mountain this time, he was gone for 40 days and 40 nights. Now, was it a literal 40 days and 40 nights? Maybe. But we do know that for them, it was a long time. And they grew restless. Now, this wasn't the first time Moses had gone up to the mountain. And in Exodus 20, he goes up to the mountain to receive the Ten Commandments. So they'd seen him go up and come down before, but this time felt like it was longer than the last. Ironically, this time, what Moses has gone up the mountain to receive is he's receiving instructions from God about the tabernacle God would have them build in order that they might worship God together. But the people were restless. They thought that God had left them. They no longer had that pillar of smoke by day and that pillar of fire by night as they did as they were wandering in the wilderness. And now they didn't have Moses, the one who talked to God for them and told them what God was saying to them. So they took things into their own hands. They gathered around Aaron and they demanded that he make gods for them who shall go before them, since Moses isn't here and Yahweh is nowhere to be found. They were looking for a suitable substitute. Now let's be honest. They did what many of us probably would have done in a similar situation. They filled the void that they were experiencing with a god and or an idol of their own creation. The calf that Aaron made for them would have been familiar to them. The image of the bull, it was what the Canaanites used to worship Baal. And the Israelites were the only people who believed in monotheism, in one God. All the other people around them, the Egyptians who they'd been with for all those years, were all polytheists. They believed in many gods. So it was not a totally random thought that if God, Yahweh, was gone, that left room for another god, because there are other gods, because look at what everybody else is doing. They're worshiping other gods. So we'll just find another one. God was good for the time. All right. We'll pick one up now. Maybe this one will be better for the time that now we're settling in this new land. But you see, God had made a promise with God's people. And the people were supposed to be monotheistic. They were supposed to understand that God was their God and they were God's people. They were supposed to respond differently. In fact, they had just received the Ten Commandments. And in the Ten Commandments, God says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. I am a jealous God. You are to worship no other God. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make an image of another God or an idol. For God is a jealous God. It doesn't take long for the people to violate that one, does it? We seem to be really good at being told what we shouldn't do, and then almost immediately we do it. At least this far into the story. Moses is up the mountain, the people have grown restless, and then as Miss Joanne said, they took their gold earrings and they offered them to Aaron. And they wanted him to make a false image of a god or an idol that was created by human hands, when they should have been remembering what the God who brought them out of Egypt had done for them. They should have been remembering and giving thanks that the God who brought their ancestors out of Egypt had also delivered them. They decide to move on to find another god. What have you done for me lately? It's as though they thought they had received all the good that Yahweh could give them, and now they're moving on to a God who could make their lives better. Now, if Aaron had reminded them of what God had done for them, perhaps they would have responded different. If Aaron had told them what Moses tells God in our reading, when Moses reminds God that you have delivered your people. In fact, remember the promise you made to Abraham, to Isaac, to Israel, who is also Jacob. And God changed God's mind. If Aaron had said those same words to the Israelites, perhaps they wouldn't have done what they did, but he didn't. And they did. And now they had a newfangled God who they began to worship. Not in the tabernacle that Moses was being told how to build, but on an altar that Aaron made for them. Throughout the seasons of Clarkson's farm, Jeremy regularly explores new and different farming techniques. None of them would you consider to be traditional. He buys, the tractor he buys for his farm is a Lamborghini. In season 3, he decides that he will, and he purchases a hovercraft and to use that to fertilize the field so that you don't have the tire tracks. You just use a hovercraft and then you get that much more yield out of, it didn't work. But constantly, Jeremy was looking for something new. A new or different way to farm. And constantly the farmers in the area are shaking their head and saying it won't work. Even the 24-year-old who works on the farm with him, Caleb, who ends up becoming the farm manager, who'd grown up farming, is looking at Jeremy, who's 40 years older, and shaking his head, said, "You can't do that in farming. There is no magic thing that you can do that will make this easier, that will ensure it's profitable, that it will ensure that the crop is larger or the better yield or to make it rain or to make the sun shine." No, in fact, you need to do what our ancestors did by and large. Yes, of course, there's some technology. But the process of farming hasn't changed all that much through the generations. Look at how God has blessed your ancestors, how they have yielded an abundant harvest in the past. And trust that that same God will continue to do so in the future. The same is true for us, not as farmers, but like the Israelites, we too can grow impatient with God and begin to seek other sources of blessing or comfort or security or hope. We create idols. We invest in things and in people who draw us away from God because they make these promises to fix, solve, improve things that after all this time, God has never fixed or solved or improved. We place our trust in them instead of God because we are impatient. My friends, during this harvest season, the finance team and the church council are working on the ministry budget for 2025. As you reflect upon the harvest that you have received, the harvest that you anticipate in the coming year, we need your help. We need your help to know which ministries we'll be able to fund in the coming years as we try to anticipate what the income will be in the new year. We need help projecting and the financial support that we'll receive to fund these ministries. Now, just like the farmers who brought the first fruits of their harvest to the tabernacle as an offering to God, we realize that none of us knows what our financial future holds. The farmer doesn't know if the sun will shine and if it will shine at the right time. The farmer doesn't know if it'll rain at the right time or if the rain will ruin the harvest. So all the farmer can do, all we can do, is to trust God and to express our intentions about what we plan to give in support of the ministries of Ascension in the coming year. The ushers will have these 2025 ministry support cards available for you to pick up on your way out of worship today. We are going to collect these in 2 weeks, on Sunday, September 20th, during worship. And I pray that as you prayerfully reflect upon God's faithfulness to you and God's faithfulness to the generations that have come before you, and as you anticipate the bounty of the harvest that you'll be blessed with in the coming year, that you'll be inspired to commit first fruits to God and to God's mission. When you get your ministry support card, you'll see the top half is based on the financial, your financial intentions. And then there's a dotted line. This will be shared with the finance, with those folks here at the church who already know what you give, the folks who count the offering and record that. They're the only ones who will see this. And they will record your intentions financially, and then they will cut that part off of the card, and below are where you intend to serve in the coming year. I suspect that you're already serving in the areas, in plenty of those areas, but if you mark a new area, we'll be sure to let the people know who serve in that ministry area as well that you would like to join them and support the mission of that ministry after we've cut off the top part, and so that they don't see your financial commitment as well. As we wait upon the Lord, as we prayerfully consider and anticipate the harvest to come, let us not be impatient. Let us not be impatient but instead and turn away from God, but instead let us turn toward God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And let us join what God is already doing through the mission and ministry of this congregation, through the mission and ministry of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, through the mission and ministry of the Christian Church in the world, demonstrating our trust, our faith, our confidence in the God who has been providing for God's people for generations in the past and will certainly continue to do so for generations to come. Amen.